Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
This procedure was known prior to the election. Any request for relief should have been sought because those ballots have not been segregated. That would disenfranchise approximately 5,600 ballots and disenfranchise voters.
Every member of either caucus has a great amount of authority and power. And how we exercise that, the people will be our judge. We'll try to work through all those issues. We're well aware of them. It makes a leadership more sensitive to each member's needs and wants. And those we'll have to work through.
I think it's two strong candidates. I think it's Martha McSally doing a good job at turning out Republicans who vote in big numbers. Republicans like to vote in Arizona. And then I think it's Kyrsten Sinema, you know, running a great strategic play to go after those independent voters and moderate Republicans. And that's what's kept it really tight the whole time.
And joining us to talk about the seesawing U.S. Senate race, as well as some of the others that are still too close to call and lawsuits dealing with uncounted ballots, are former state Senate Minority Leader David Shapiro and Kevin DeMena with DeMena Public Affairs. Guys, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
So let's talk about this U.S. Senate race, which, as we just heard, has been tight the whole time, even when one candidate had maybe a couple, 10,000 vote lead or so. We saw yesterday that when some more votes came in, Kyrsten Sinema overcame the lead that Martha McSally had and is now up by about 9,000 votes. David, what do you make of the fact that it's been as tight as it has and sort of where it is now?
I think we expected this. I mean, this was the most expensive Senate race in Arizona history. And, both candidates ran solid campaigns. They certainly were at the middle fighting for the independent vote, fighting for moderate Democrats and Republicans. And, you know, the state is certainly shifting, but I think a lot of it was just this huge, huge amount of money that was spent in the state in this race.
Kevin, do you expect it to stay this close ultimately until all the ballots are counted, however long that takes?
It's going to be a photo finish. The early numbers tend to be the best indicator of the later numbers. Maricopa County is where all the action really is, and the action truly is in female voters under 40. And when those numbers finally arrive, which I think is a bit of a travesty that we are waiting this long for this many votes to be counted, but it's going to be a photo finish.
And do you expect it to stay as it is now? I mean, do you have a sense of, I mean, obviously we don't know how people have voted. We know sort of roughly what the ballots are left to be counted. Do you expect that in the end, Sinema will be on top, or do you think McSally will flip it back?
You know, from my perspective as a Republican, looking at the operations of these two campaigns, they both run extraordinarily effective campaigns. But no candidate is really in charge of their message any longer. It's so frustrating to be running a marketing campaign about yourself and then find that others are spending 10 times what you're spending. So well-run campaigns, I give McSally the edge. This is Arizona. It is typically a Republican state. But again, I'm looking for a photo finish.
And this might be wishful thinking on both of our parts, but of course I give Sinema the edge. And the reason I give her the edge is actually really exactly what Kevin just said about Maricopa County. With so many outstanding votes in Maricopa County, historically it's true that if Maricopa County had the most outstanding votes at the end, the late numbers edged towards Republicans. But Kevin, you know this, the county has changed. I mean, the county has elected countywide Democratic elected officials in the last election, and the numbers that came out of Maricopa County yesterday gave Kyrsten Sinema a significant edge. And I think that's going to continue to be the case. I would not be surprised to see her numbers grow, but I agree with Kevin. I think at the end of the day, it's going to be within a percentage point. It's going to be a photo finish. But I think those Maricopa County numbers actually today, if not giving an edge to Democrats, they're going to be dead even.
How much do you think that, like you mentioned, these last 600,000 that came in, there's about 300,000 left in Maricopa County and more around the state. Where do you think it looks like those are leaning? You mentioned the county. What about the rest of the state?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the rural counties in the state, other than, a few Democratic senators are going to lean towards the Republicans. But the numbers just aren't there. There are so many more ballots in Maricopa County. And I'll tell you, the reason for that is not the county recorder has done something wrong. The reason is that so many voters in Maricopa County now, and this is a new phenomenon in the last few election cycles, are requesting early ballots and then turning them in on election day. I was one of those voters.
It's your fault.
And it was
it's
Kevin, too, the two of us. Many Maricopa voters request the early ballot and they turn it in on election day in part because we're an urban area. Your polling place is so close, it's just as easy as taking it to the post office. You might as well wait till election day and just pop in your polling place, bypass the line, and drop your ballot.
Isn't it the smart play? Late-breaking news, I need to decide how to vote that morning. Yeah. And the notion of just clearing it out of your inbox should be an old one. We need to wait. This is actually, I think, the new way. That said, our ability to count these votes and process this, we've just been through an extraordinary election cycle. The counting part of it shouldn't extend that. This should not be death by a thousand cuts, and that's what it feels like.
So you're saying you don't want more, you do not want more campaign commercials?
I'm done. I am truly done.
Well, so I guess this, I mean, going slightly off topic here, I mean, do you think that there might be an appetite in the legislature or somewhere else to change the way that early voting happens to maybe say that it has to be received X number of days before election day or some kind of change like that?
Mark, it's way more important to me that every voter's voice is heard than that we know the result immediately upon the election. It is, you know, one of the things that I'm most concerned about in some of the races around the country are issues of disenfranchisement. And one of the things that I really appreciate about Adrian Fontes is he has focused that office's attention on making sure that every vote is counted. He has done voter registration drives. He has helped get people signed up for the permanent early voting list. And the issue that I know we're going to talk about that we're facing in court right now is that Adrian Fontes wants every vote that was cast that can be counted, counted. If it was cast before the deadline and it can be verified as being from the correct person, it should be counted. And to me, that is far more important than this American tendency to want to have the answers right now, just this second.
I want them both. I expect a little more from my government than accurate counting. I think since the internet's come along that we should be able to get this done more quickly. The real problem is the office of the recorder and these other offices. It's been 100 years plus since statehood. The chances of me jumping your gold mining claim have gone way down. When we drafted this structure for county government, we gave these guys the responsibility to count votes, and we elected them because we didn't trust corporations and we didn't trust big government back then. All that has changed. We need to professionalize this system among the 15 counties. That's part of what the GOP's lawsuit is about. But the notion that we elect assessors for property taxes and recorders to count votes, we need to professionalize this. Big think, not for today, but going forward.
Let's talk a little bit more about this Republican lawsuit. There's a hearing later today, and we'll find out more about what's going to happen next then. But what do you make of this, David, about specifically the timing of this lawsuit?
The timing is there's a close Senate race. You know, we would not be talking about lawsuits today. We'd be talking about a lot of other things today if the U.S. Senate race were not as close as it is. And to be clear, I mean, in terms of the professionalization of the ballot counting process in the county, you know, certainly we have seen a shift in the top elected leader. But the folks that are running the elections on a day-to-day basis, Christy Passarelli, who's been at the county for years, she served under multiple different county recorders of different parties. We have to be clear that, you know, not much has changed in the professional operation of the county recorder's office. The big difference has been is trying to enfranchise more voters, trying to get more people into the process. And that's what this lawsuit is about. This lawsuit is about the fact that county recorder Adrian Fontes and other county recorders in the state, he's not the only one, and this isn't the first time this has been done, is going to great lengths to ensure that voters who have cast their ballots have cast early mail-in ballots where you have to sign the envelope, that those signatures are verified, and that it's determined that the person who signed it is the person who that ballot belongs to. And we should all be happy about that. We shouldn't be filing lawsuits to stop that from happening. We shouldn't also be filing lawsuits to stop these emergency voting centers that came up over the weekend. We knew turnout numbers were going to be huge. Everyone, including the Republicans, was complaining about lines on Election Day. Imagine if we hadn't had those emergency voting centers over the weekend where people could go vote then instead of having to get in line on Tuesday. This is about the franchise. It's about getting more people in the process. And the lawsuit is discouraging in that it seems that they're trying to disenfranchise people who've cast their ballots.
And that's a political perspective. It truly is. From an operational point of view, 15 counties doing this 15 ways is a disaster. That disenfranchises everyone. Forget about the timeliness of results. It's just time for this to be done. The Republican Party's push is for uniformity. The notion that one county has one set of procedures and another a different set is silly. This is not a home rule exercise. So,
but then why not sue the counties that aren't going to the lengths that Adrian Fontes is going to make sure that votes are counted? Why not sue those
counties?
It's
precisely what the Democrat Party has pushed for, which is to enfranchise every single vote. The notion that there's somehow a better result if Democrat turnout registers more highly. President Trump came, President Bush came. Republican turnout is there. It's a matter of the photo finish. We just got to count it, but we've got to count it right.
I want to ask you about sort of the practical effect, because I've heard the chairman of the Maricopa County Republican Party talking about how this isn't about not getting votes counted or not counting votes. It's about, Kevin, to your point, about making sure that the counties are doing things the same way.
Right.
But it seems as though if they are successful in this lawsuit, the practical impact would be that certain votes are not counted, even if that's not their stated intention.
Yes. I don't disagree with that. We may want to debate what those votes will be. No one knows. And the reality of it is that in this photo finish kind of a setting, this is more about operations and process than which votes get counted. Doing this correctly is extremely important. That's what the lawsuit is about. As David says, taking your time to count them, that gets us a good result as well. Got to do it right.
I mean, you know, the one thing I would say specifically on the issue of the votes cast at the emergency voting centers and the Republican Party wanting those to be separated out, these voters were told, you can come to this location on this date before the election, cast your ballot, and it will be counted. And the Republican Party is saying, I want those votes taken out. I want them separated because there's a potential that we are going to make it so that they're not counted.
If those weren't lawful
votes, why would
we
disenfranchise those voters?
Because we need to segregate them. I mean, we have guidelines in statute that apply to Democrats, Republicans, Green Party, and independents. They've got to be applied uniformly.
I agree with Cindy McCain and Grant Woods, who came out and said those votes should be counted.
Well, we'll certainly find out, I think, maybe a little bit after 2 o'clock today where the county judge stands on that. I've been speaking with David Shapira and Kevin DeMena on the Friday Newscap. More of the conversation just ahead. Good morning. It's the show here on KJZZ 91.5. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap. I'm Mark Brody, along with Lauren Gilger here in Phoenix, joined this morning by Kevin DeMena with DeMena Public Affairs and former State Senate Minority Leader David Shapira. Guys, let's talk about a couple of other statewide races that have become closer as more and more votes have been counted, including that for a superintendent of public instruction, where the Democrat Kathy Hoffman actually took the lead in the race yesterday by about 20,000 votes over Republican Frank Riggs. Guys, we thought this was going to be another one of those close races. David, this was a race you were in the primary. Are you surprised that this is how it's going at this point?
I'm not. You know, David Garcia came within one percentage point of winning this race 4 years ago. You know, this is the education year. It's a better year for Democrats than 4 years ago was. And so I'm not surprised at all that this race is close. It's been a bit of a seesaw. But, you know, Kathy Hoffman is now up by 20,000 votes, and I think that lead, it'll stay around there, if not expand, in the next few days.
Kevin, when you look at the number of votes that are outstanding, I think it's probably safe to say that most, if not all of them, had a vote in the Senate race. I mean, it's top of the ticket. Do you get the sense that there might be some of those outstanding ballots that maybe didn't quite make it all the way down to superintendent of public instruction?
We always study this. The consultants pore over this for months after the results are in as to why the governor had a margin and another statewide race, perhaps the U.S. Senate, had a different margin. Why those votes migrate back and forth, it's like reading the bones. But the reality is, in a race like Superintendent of Public Instruction, with the former candidate in the primary sitting next to me, the drop-off is substantial. It's difficult for me to articulate what that office actually does. By the way, we have 15 county school superintendents as well. Difficult for me to articulate what they do. But as David said, the year of education and the teacher, I would expect these votes to come in line and correlate pretty much with the U.S. Senate count as they come in.
So do you think that voters were really making a differentiation between, for example, voting for Governor Ducey, but then also voting for Kathy Hoffman?
The answer is yes. The true question lies at the bottom of the ticket, where real education matters, with overrides and school boards and the community college district.
Prop 305.
All of these further down the ticket, that's where the math really speaks to you as to who the high propensity voter is and what they really want.
How out of the ordinary would that be if voters are really splitting the ticket like this?
In this environment, with where Arizona is right now, I would consider it more the norm. You know, voters, underestimating them is dangerous. We know this, but they're selective. This ballot, once we purge it of judge retention, which wastes everybody's time and turns voters off, you actually had a pretty meaty menu. And my experience is people were pretty selective, and we'll see that. Once this canvas is certified in December, well, I think we'll see that.
There was very little drop-off in this election. I mean, all you have to do is look at the numbers to answer your question. I mean, there are over 1.8 million votes so far cast in the superintendent's race, about how many votes have been cast in the governor's race. So voters were voting at least down ballot within the statewide races. And Kevin's exactly right. You know, one of the biggest disconnects that I'm seeing from people after the election, or hearing from people after the election, is how did people vote for Doug Ducey so overwhelmingly and then kill Prop 305, the school private school voucher expansion, so resoundingly on a 2-to-1 basis when this was one of Doug Ducey's big policy issues. In fact, he did a robocall in favor of Prop 305 in the waning days. You know, the Save Our School folks, I've been talking with them over the last few days, and, you know, it's pretty amazing and encouraging and heartening that I think their field effort, their outreach around the state made a difference and was able to, they were able to convince voters that even if you support Doug Ducey, wherever you are on the political spectrum, this school voucher expansion idea is a bad idea and therefore should not go, should not pass.
So guys, let's talk about one other race that is getting closer, and that is for Secretary of State. Again, we thought this one might be a close one on and after Election Day. Steve Gaynor is still in the lead, the Republican, pretty sizable lead, but it got basically cut in half after yesterday's votes. David, do you expect that to continue?
This was called, let's just be clear, this race was called prematurely. When the AP called this race on election night, I was shocked looking at the numbers that they would do so. I saw Katie Hobbs later that night, and folks were giving her condolences and saying, you know, sorry that you lost. And she, you know, the consummate election professional running to be the state's election leader, said, it's not over. There's so many votes outstanding left to be counted, and the race is narrow enough. Now, let's be clear. You said he's still in the lead and has his margin cut. Steve Gaynor is winning by less than Kathy Hoffman is winning by right now. So if we say the superintendent's race is still too close to call, then the Secretary of State's race is certainly too close to call with under 20,000 votes separating the two candidates.
Kevin, what do you think? I mean, do you think that ultimately Gaynor hangs on to this?
I think ultimately Gaynor does. This office is an anomaly. By and large, we did some polling. My firm, right before the general, dropped party labels. We simply put the two candidates opposite each other, and they each pulled in 20% of likely voters, which left 60% not sure and undecided.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah. Arizona doesn't realize, at least widely, that this is the vice governor, that this is effectively the person in waiting if we need to pass the nuclear codes along. We need to relabel this, make it a little more clear, but I call it for Gaynor. I do think it's going to be much closer than it is, correlating to the statewide votes that are coming in at the top of the ticket.
What do you make of that? That Kathy Hoffman's lead is more significant than Steve Gaynor's at this point? Like, in the sense that, does that to you, David, say that a lot of teachers cross party lines, or a lot of people were swayed by that education argument?
Yeah, like I said, you know, this was the education year. We saw it with the Red for Ed movement at the Capitol, and Ducey ultimately having to acquiesce and provide somewhat of the teacher raise they were asking for, a portion of it. And I think that people thought that that was going to fizzle out, that that was going to die out before the November 6th election, and it clearly did not. You know, seeing what happened with Prop 305 and the bond and override elections and the superintendent's race, you know, voters still had education on their minds going into this election.
So fizzle is the wrong word. I think a lot of folks were wondering about its sustainability. I think the jury is now in on that, precisely the effect we're waiting. But the reality of all of this is that Arizona, we're always looking to that tipping point. This election isn't clear that it is, but it's very clear we're closer. We're much closer, 2 or 4 years away.
So just a few minutes left. I want to talk about another election that happened, but not on Tuesday this week. That is for new leadership at the state capitol. In the Senate, Republicans will maintain their 17-13 advantage. In the House, though, a 31-29, really no margin for error on the Republican side margin there. Kevin, you've spent a lot of time working with lawmakers down there. In the House, Rusty Bowers from Mesa has been a legislator for a while, a couple stints down there. He's going to be the new House Speaker. How do you think that he will be approaching this new, smaller majority?
I'm excited for Senator Bowers to do this. I say Senator Bowers. He actually, when the Senate was split 15-15, was part of the Republican leadership team at the time. So coming over and presiding as Speaker of the House with 31 votes, nothing to spare, I think he's the right guy. It's going to be something to watch. If every one of them is a snowflake, 31 of them means no one can leave the reservation. And in this setting, what that really will create is decision-making at the middle. It has to be that. The center in the legislature will be the path through which big issues flow. In the Senate, as you pointed out, Mark, the constitution of that Republican caucus is much more moderate than it's been. I think the Republican leadership there, likewise. David Bradley from Tucson is the new Senate minority leader, following a storied legacy in the Senate. And I think has made it very clear his job, his mission is to empower other members. Doesn't want to bring an agenda. So this is going to be an interesting approach starting at the center.
David, do you think that that is the case, that legislation will be starting in the middle?
Well, first I want to just go back and not correct, but address one thing, and that is you said the Senate's going to stay 17-13. As we talked about the closeness of the margins in the Senate races, as we saw the update yesterday, we learned, and I was telling Kevin about this as we walked in, that the Senate race in District 28 is at a razor-thin 800-vote margin right now.
Kate Brophy McGee and Christine
Marsh. Christine Marsh ran an excellent campaign against a popular incumbent. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens in that race, because I think there's a real legitimate chance with these updates coming the next couple days that race could flip, which would mean that not only would the margin in the House be the closest margin that Democrats have had for 50 years, but the margin in the Senate would be the closest that they've had since that 15-15 tie 20 or 18 years ago. I think I'm encouraged, like Kevin, by Rusty Bowers' election as Speaker. Rusty and I have been friends. We've worked together at EVIT for the last 5 years, and he is an amazing, amazing man. We may not agree politically on a lot of stuff, but he is a nice guy who is going to be able to work together, I think, with both sides. And I'm also encouraged by the leadership elections and the minority on both sides. I think, David Bradley, I've known for many years, and Charlene Fernandez in the House, they're going to do a great job, knowing when to throw stones and knowing when to build bridges and work across the aisle to get things done.
All right. That's David Shapiro, former state Senate minority leader, also with us on the Friday Newscap. Kevin DeMena with DeMena Public Affairs. Guys, thanks for being here.
What a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.